Welcome to Management Matters, a National Academy of Public Administration podcast where policy meets practice. I'm Terry Girton, president of the Academy. On this episode, I'll discuss what it takes to build resilient communities with my guest, Jim Mertley. Jim's an Academy Fellow and the Chief Resilience Officer for Miami-Dade County. Jim, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Terry. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I want to jump right in because in August, we're talking about resilient communities as one of our 12 grand challenges. And obviously, that is core to what you're doing. So as the Chief Resilience Officer, what does resilience mean to you? How do you define it?
Well, it's interesting, Terry. From my professional career, working in public administration, public policy, I see it as kind of on a continuum of words that we have used to apply in a public policy standpoint, how government and communities are preparing themselves for unexpected events, and also even more now using the term resilience for not just the events, but for the long-term stresses that impact our communities. And I say this is on a continuum for me personally, because in my career, I've been involved with emergency management, where you're very much focused on incident management. You're dealing with the approaching storm or another event. And I've also had the responsibility for handling issues that are not event-driven, but are kind of underlying stresses in our community, to affordable housing, trying to manage traffic. Those things are always going on in the community, and they're really not divorced when you're impacted by these other situations. So I've seen under resilience the opportunity to kind of merge those two concepts and to think of a strategy, intergovernmental strategy, that allows the community to prepare itself for these incidents that occur, but gear that to the long-term approach that you have to take to deal with these stresses. So that's what resilience means to me. It's when the storm hits you and you need to recover, resilience recover moves you forward, not only in the standpoint of dealing with that hurricane or other impact, but making sure you're doing that in an equitable way in the community, that you're bringing your housing stock, not only recovering the housing stock, but making it more affordable than it was in the before the storm or other event.
I love that, both the intergovernmental aspect and the tying it to community and not just crisis. Would you say that Miami-Dade County faces unique resilience issues?
We certainly have our share of climate related issues, both short and the stresses and the shocks. Actually, within the last hour, it was announced that we have a hurricane forming in the Atlantic, Gonzalo. It'll be first a tropical storm, but scheduled to be a hurricane. Oh. And we don't know if it'll come towards mainland Florida, but that's what we expect during hurricane season. And we'll know that that's part of the things that we have to prepare for every year through our emergency management and also other things that we do in our budget. But thinking about it from the resilience standpoint, we now know that these storm events, the high tide events that happened in the fall all along the East Coast, are getting worse because of climate change, because of a warming atmosphere. And that change in the atmosphere is warming our oceans and rising the sea. So in a way, climate change amplifies all those other shocks that we know are sort of part of living in paradise. But we have to be prepared for them. So we're watching these annual events that we can almost tell by a calendar we may be impacted by. But we're also projecting the long-term stress that comes from sea level rise and climate change.
Well, so Miami's been a leader in this space for a while now. How did they get started in resilience planning?
Well, it started with dealing with the climate issues. About 10 years ago, the four counties in Southeast Florida, those are the three largest counties in population in the state, Palm Beach, Broward, and Dade, and our beloved Florida Keys, Monroe County, we found that we were trying to pursue the same ideas and funding both in Tallahassee, our state capital, and Washington, D.C. And we would bump into the halls of Congress together trying to achieve the same goal. So we decided to form our elected leaders, a bipartisan group, formed a climate change compact. And that provided the framework for senior staff of the four counties and eventually municipal staff to collaborate on these issues of climate and sea level rise. And as we grew to get our feet on the ground on those issues and to understand how we could work together, we were able to get foundation support. Kresge Foundation was a great supporter of ours early on. And we started branching out into issues beyond just training and planning for the eventual effects of sea level rise and getting into things that even involved our experience here dealing with the pandemic. So while it started in climate, the success that intergovernmental coordination had across county lines, bipartisan, meant that it was a tool available to deal with the next unexpected set of things that we were dealt with.
You mentioned the Kresge Foundation, and I know you've also been involved with the Rockefeller Foundation's 100 Resilient Cities, and now you're part of the Arsht Rockefeller Foundation Resilience Center. What kind of extra support and resources does that partnership bring to you?
We've had really amazing support institutionally from Rockefeller and Kresge and the Miami Foundation here in our community. And they work together in many cases, along with bank foundations like Wells Fargo Foundation. So what they've done is provide, tangible support financially and also bringing together experts and our peers. And that was really the foundation of 100 Resilient Cities, 100 cities around the world who, with the support of the Rockefeller Foundation, prepared resilient strategies and did a lot of peer-to-peer sharing of how to deal with similar issues. That network that was created by the Rockefeller Foundation has now morphed into a freestanding network of pretty much those same 100 cities, but they're independent of Rockefeller Foundation. They still get some support from Rockefeller, but they're being supported by other areas also. So we continue to remain a member of that global network of resilient cities. And then the Rockefeller Foundation proper came back after we developed our strategy in two occasions and have helped us with testing for the virus and with looking at recovery issues in our community. So we believe because we did this strategy and we had a document that looked comprehensively at these shocks and stresses, it was an easy avenue for Rockefeller to come in and sort of replug in with resources around specific issues, which were of interest to Rockefeller. And the same way, the Adrian Arch Rockefeller Foundation Resilience Center, it's a little confusing, all the different names here. Adrian Arch, by the way, is a well-known Miami figure. She's the Adrian Arch Performing Arts Center is named for her in Miami. She spends a lot of her time now in Washington, D.C. with the Atlantic Council, where she had started a resilience center and then scaled it up tremendously when the Rockefeller Foundation came in and said, we want to partner with you. So In the case of that partnership, they've come in on a third initiative and said, let's develop a template mobile pod that we could use to talk to people in their community about resilience. And Miami is a crossroads for international shipping and tours. Well, a little fewer of tours right now because of the pandemic, but the freight movements are still very strong. And the kind of ubiquitous unit for moving goods in on a ship or on a railroad or even behind a truck is a container, a 40-foot metal container that you see all over our community and any port community in the United States. We got one of those donated and partnered with the Resilience Center, the Adrian Arch Resilience Center, and have it repurposed, fabricated into a mobile community resilience pod. And it's fascinating. It rolls in behind a truck. We unload it. We lift up doors that have been manufactured from the pod. And inside, we have 3D interfaces and information to share with people. We're not quite deploying it as much as we wanted to right now because it draws a crowd. And that's something that normally you would want to see happen. But right now, we really don't want people gathering in large groups. So it's we've got it hibernating, but we're very excited about those kinds of investments that foundations can make with you and do these innovative ideas. It's hard for government to do that sometimes. And once we have the predicate tested, then we can find ways to transfer it into the government and perhaps do more. But we had the MSC Shipping Foundation provide the container for free. So add another, you know, just a lot of great help from philanthropy to assist us as we move forward and implement a resilience strategy.
So you've managed to build a coalition across municipal boundaries and across sectors that's really driving change in your community. I want to follow that along with the recently released Resilient 305 plan that the mayor just recently released, 59 actions and a 20-year resilience strategy for 34 communities in the county, and organized the county budget around resilience themes. So I'm listening to you talk about community engagement. How did you use community engagement to build countywide buy-in for that kind of strategy?
Well, this again, I want to credit the Rockefeller Foundation and 100 Resilient Cities. When we were asked to consider joining, you had to apply and compete. We said, really, we don't want to do this as a single unit of government. That's not the way problems are solved here. We'd like to at least have two major cities join with us in one application. And that was easy to talk about. It wasn't so easy to put together, frankly, but we did it. And we travel under the brand of Greater Miami and the Beaches when we were in that coalition. Mm-hmm. And that's the group that put the plan together. But as we then launched it over a year ago, we brought in the other cities in our county, all 34, through pledges from their mayors to assist in implementation. And It's totally voluntary. There's no ordinance that the county passed that's saying to the cities you must participate. It offers itself as an added value to the cities to collaborate together and to help solve individual issues within their municipal boundaries. So that model that from the very start realized that you had to have counties and cities working together was very important. As to the county budget, I must say, I think if there's one thing and all we've done in the last 5 years that is, I would say maybe the most important thing is when our budget director really said, I'd like to know more about resilience. And she participated in some of the peer-to-peer sessions that Rockefeller was, providing us. And It's at the time it was about an $8 billion budget. It's now a $9 billion budget. Wow. And it is organized around resilience principles. Jennifer Moon, our budget director and deputy mayor, her theme is that every day, the services the government supplies its constituents and its visitors should be a representation of resilience. You should be able to have an organization that is capable of dealing with the unexpected, and a budget that can be redeployed quickly to address those things. And she has figured that out, and she has the support of our mayor and our 13-member county commission. And then a lot of what is done to the budget would look like any other county budget around the country. But I think that overall theme of thinking about county government as a delivering resilience every day and being prepared for the unexpected is really what stands out for me. I think, you know, most important things that county government does, almost any government, is where do you spend your money? And that is evidence to me that we're making headway. It's not like we've had a revolution, but it is slowly every year. This year, we've added a grade card for the departments that demonstrate back how they're doing in using resilience strategies in their regular work. So credit to the leadership of our budget director on that one.
That's really a powerful observation. And you mentioned the grade system. Is the performance against the metrics in the plan tied to the budget? Or in addition to doing resilience budgeting, are you doing performance-based resilience budgeting?
Yes, I think that particular alignment is in county government. So it doesn't attempt to measure all the cities. Mm-hmm. The large countywide strategy has measures in it, but it allows the cities and the county to go into their own systems and establish their own measures that make sense to them.
So the plan's been in effect, I guess, really about a year. Is it helping you in the midst of the pandemic? Are you using those plans and tools to respond to this crisis?
We certainly are. It's a very important tool. It's not the only one, but it's very important. During the 3 years that we were partnering with the Rockefeller Foundation and our partner cities, we actually had an experience with the mosquito-borne virus called Zika. Mm-hmm. And while that is always exists within tropical communities, like dengue fever and other things, at certain times it'll flare up. And the flare up with Zika, if you'll remember, had some repercussions that were very serious. And it took on not a pandemic dimension, but certainly a frightening experience for a tourist-based economy where we couldn't guarantee people that they would be safe from this disease. So we had to mobilize and challenge that with a set of steps that made sense for dealing with a mosquito-borne disease. And we were able to successfully come out of that. So we took that experience and added an action item in the strategy dealing with pandemic communications. That was the way we decided to position that action item, that when and if we had a future incident dealing with a pandemic or a virus outbreak, that the communications part of that would be very important to the resilience. And lo and behold, I don't have to tell you the story. It's just been unbelievable trying to deal with the uncertainties and the county mayor here is a strong mayor. He has chief executive powers, and he has the one that makes up his decision: are the beaches open? Are the businesses? Is the curfew at 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock? You know, so he every day he is having to manage that, and it's an awesome responsibility for Mayor Jimenez. But we're able to provide one of the tools to him to take on that responsibility.
Well, I know, we started at the beginning talking about climate and environment. And I recall one of the Democratic presidential debates that the candidates were talking about climate change and the potential of moving people out of Miami as sea levels rise came up in that exchange. So you've got your resilience plan. And then in November, Miami declared a climate emergency and released the Miami Forever Climate Ready strategy for the next 40 years. So how does Miami's climate strategy fit with the resilience strategy in the county? Do they reinforce each other? Do they diverge? How do you put those all those pieces together?
Well, there, you know, there's not a one-size-fits-all strategy here. And I think the city of Miami, our largest city and where our downtown core is, they have certain issues dealing with flooding today. They're exposed to storm surge and other things that demanded that they move forward quicker on a specific set of actions than the county needed to, because the county wouldn't impose ourselves in that city unless the city and the county had agreed upon earlier. So what we knew that was going to happen. We were aware of it. It's in sync with the larger countywide strategy, but it's more specific to the issues of the incorporated area of the city of Miami. And a lot of this goes to very unique responsibilities that the county charter allocates in our county. The county does the airport and the port and the transportation system. So the city doesn't have to focus on those. They focus on a number of other issues in lieu of those.
So it's really important then, back to all of that collaboration, to make sure that these pieces come together. Have you had to make any modifications to those resilience plans and those response plans with the coronavirus pandemic? How does it affect your thoughts about resilience and emergency response?
Well, on the emergency response side, working with our partners in the Office of Emergency Management, we're cognizant of the fact that all of our shelters weren't designed for the social spacing distancing that is necessary. So while we're not the lead, we are helping that office determine the alterations that have to be made in existing facilities and locate new ones. That's a major concern, because evacuation can have a huge impact on our community if we have to order that, if a storm actually starts to come directly at us. I think also the situation has arisen that I'm here at the office interviewing with you, but I'm only in the office one day every 2 weeks. And the remainder of my staff are almost always working at home. So this whole evolution that we did as a reaction to this unexpected onset of the pandemic, sending everybody home, figuring out a way to do these Zoom calls and other meetings, as I'm sure you're recognizing nationally, may become part of the normal way of dealing with things after we finally survive this pandemic. And so we're trying to figure that out from a resiliency standpoint with a host of other partners. You know, what does that mean for our public transportation system? How do we best handle the needs of our 26,000 county employees? You know, they tended to have centralized points where they all would drive into and use the parking garage or come by our county transit systems. And, you know, the redeployment home and the ability to work from home is changing all of our preconceived notions about that. Mm-hmm. And I think we really don't know where we're going to end up. Right now is certainly a response to the pandemic, but there are some huge benefits that are being measured in terms of the emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, just the visual air quality, although we're lucky the community doesn't have severe air quality problems. But even when we were in complete close down and the beaches were closed, people could see an increase in water quality in our wonderful Biscayne Bay. So how, I don't know where this all is going to go, but it definitely says to me that when we do get restabilized after the worst of the pandemic, we're not going to look the same and we won't operate the same. And we'll have to figure that out and adapt in a resilient way.
Well, speaking of adapting, I can imagine that the coronavirus has broadened your role as Chief Resilience Officer. Thinking about resilience in Miami, we would think about hurricanes. Have you had a lot of, have you taken on a lot of other responsibilities under your resilience title?
I would say that I'm very fortunate, Terry, in that my job is more augmenting and assisting people in the agencies. I mean, I don't need to have that responsibility of running the Office of Emergency Management or running our environmental programs. But we are sort of a special group of experts that can help them adjust their current practices and understand what are being done in other cities from our peer connections, and to help them think about, you know, those over the horizon issues that are very tough for a department to look at beyond the, you know, maybe the 5-year capital improvements plan. So, you know, how can we really transition in our bus fleet? We're already transitioning to CNG gas, but we want to go electric, and we've ordered some electric buses, and so we can start helping on those issues that require, you know, some outside advisors. You're not buried in the details of procurement, but you're able to sort of evaluate your options for the next big step you need to make as a line department that has that, you know, really does the heavy lifting to run county government. So I'm lucky. I've got that kind of a role to play. I enjoy that role. My office is organized. We're organized in 3 small working units, one dealing with mitigation, which is the reduction of greenhouse gases. One is adaptation, dealing with preparing for the changes coming because of sea level rise. And another unit that is equal in size and importance is dedicated completely to communications and outreach, just because we think that's equally important to the technical issues.
So you've got a broad view of the challenges and the issues that are going on really across the county and within Miami particularly. I want to wrap up with one final question then. What do you see as you're watching sort of rising public administrators? Are they prepared to respond to these kinds of intersectoral, really integrated across agency critical challenges? Are we training our next generation of public administrators to be able to deal with these kinds of challenges?
Well, let me answer that question from this perspective, because we really enjoy and encourage interns to come into our office. And of course, that was a physical experience for them. They would be finishing college or be in between years, and we would establish them at a desk. And now we have 4 interns that are in 4 different locations around the country and communicate with us through Zoom calls. And they have assignments, and they're, they join all of our other inter-office and interdepartmental communications. And what I'm appreciative of is that they're coming with some brand new ideas about how to deal with issues like equity and how to deal with a much diverse set of demographic issues that I think intellectually a lot of us thought we were on top of, but it's refreshing to hear from this next generation that they're anxious to see those issues pursued and that they should be as important as some of the other things that we were trained in. They're certainly all attuned to the climate issues. There's not, they come ready and asking why we're not doing more. Mm-hmm. So if those are 4, just they're not random because they self-selected us from others in their that their institutions had outreach to. But they're all very capable, and I just hope they're representative of the next generation of public administrators.
That's very encouraging. Jim, you've given us a lot to think about, and you've got a huge job and responsibility. Thanks for spending some time with us today, and stay safe and well.
Terry, thanks so much for asking me to do this, and I hope you and the staff at the Academy are safe and well.
For our listeners, check back every Monday for a new podcast from the Academy. We'll be talking to Academy fellows each week about the challenges facing public administrators at every level of government as we try to make government work and work for all. Thanks for listening.